You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to the Kotke Ride Home for Friday, August 21st, 2020. I'm Jackson Bird. The 3D printed sushi restaurant that takes a DNA sample with your reservation. Why we might not remember much of our day-to-day lives during the pandemic. The return of mouse-sized elephants. And the emerging trend of drive-through haunted houses. Here are some of the cool things from the news today. A restaurant in Tokyo is planning to 3D print sushi. But that is not all. The 3D printed sushi is going to be biometrically tailored to your nutritional needs. The restaurant is called Sushi Singularity, and it's run by a company called Open Meals, who are really into strange techie food endeavors. More on that in a minute. But the way that this particular one works is that when you make a reservation at Sushi Singularity, you will be given a health kit through which to submit biological samples. On the website, it describes these as DNA, urine, and intestinal tests, but I don't think they're actually making you do all of that for, say, one visit to the restaurant. The website is laying this out as a model for the future of food, in which all people would already have established health IDs consisting of that information. The mock-up they have of the health kit looks more like it's probably just a saliva test. Quoting My Modern Met, "Biometric and DNA data gathered from these custom kits will inform a personalized nutrition infusion. The encoded sushi, customized to each guest's nutrient needs, is then artfully produced by 3D printers and laser technology." End quote. And like I said, Open Meals is aiming high, wanting this to eventually be something fairly standard. Quoting again, "The food fabrication machines, food operation system, and health identification employed by the cutting-edge restaurant will eventually be smaller and available to general consumers. This culinary digitization will require immense collaborative and technological efforts. According to Open Meals, food must first be encoded with complex algorithms that account for texture, taste, heat, smell, etc. Then these encoded dishes must be made available online through a platform called Foodbase. And lastly, anyone wishing to create a downloadable dish must have the correct ingredients in 3D printing format." End quote. And the 3D printed sushi itself is really artfully designed. I mean, that alone would bring a bunch of people to a restaurant, let alone the gimmick of being customized for your unique nutritional needs. Though as weird as it does sound in this moment, like, I don't know that I'd be super mad if this were in some way the direction we go for food. You know, there are a ton of advances being made in 3D bioprinting right now. I've talked on previous episodes about some of the initiatives to 3D bioprint meat alternatives to lessen the meat industry's impact on the environment. And just as someone with some annoying dietary restrictions, I would be pretty excited about going into a restaurant and knowing that whatever I'm being served is guaranteed not to make me sick in any way. That would rock. But like I said, Open Meals has some other weird projects. One is called Cyber Wagashi, and it uses weather data so that you can taste the weather. Watch out, Skittles. And a few years ago at South by Southwest, they debuted a prototype of their sushi teleportation device, which basically had a chef in Tokyo making sushi that was then scanned and remade exactly by a robot arm in Austin. And both of these projects use their custom 3D bioprinter and their method of digitizing and categorizing elements of food. So keep an eye out on the company Open Meals. They're trying to start what they call a fifth food revolution. And you know, parts of it just might play out. All right, so I know that it is the middle of August, but every now and then I have brief moments where I genuinely think that it's March. Like, I forget that we've done spring and most of summer already. July 4th happened, so did Easter, my birthday. Like, I know time has passed and I have some memories of it, but not any huge standout memories. I keep thinking that those flagship events haven't happened yet this year. Some of my clearest memories of 2020 are of the quick series of trips that I took right before lockdown began. And I know I'm not alone in this sort of off-kilter spatial and memory confusion, but it's nevertheless reassuring to get some validation. Tim Harford recently wrote about his own experiences with this sensation in the Financial Times, how for him, he especially keeps remembering the hotel rooms he stayed in on trips in the past. And he proposes that part of the reason many of our memories are blending together or not standing out right now is because many of us haven't been going anywhere. I mean, sure, we're experiencing a lot of new and hugely significant things, but we're largely staying in one place, maybe even in the exact same room. Quoting the Financial Times, the psychologist Barbara Tversky, author of Mind in Motion, argues that our minds are built on a foundation of cognition about place, space, and movement that creeps into our language with phrases such as built on a foundation and creeps into. Our brains started by helping us process our surroundings and the threats and opportunities they presented. Abstract thinking is an adaptation of those basic spatial capacities. This may be why not all novelty is created alike. Our brains seem to record a new place with a particular vividness. End quote. So in Harford's case, even though he didn't do anything exciting in those hotel rooms he keeps remembering, he was in a new place for the first time, and his brain started taking it all in and committing it to memory. Our brains use physical places to help imprint our memories. I've realized that I definitely do this. You know, when I think back on an important conversation or realization that I once had, I often remember where I was before I recall any other details. Quoting again, no wonder champion mnemonists often use the method of loci or memory palace technique, memorizing long lists of abstract information by picturing vivid images in well-defined spaces, such as the rooms of a childhood home. This may be why, when we ask people to recall pivotal moments in history such as the fall of the Berlin Wall or the 9/11 terror attacks in Manhattan, we ask, where were you when you heard? COVID-19 may be as significant an episode as any, but it will not trigger the same sharp memories. Where were you during the pandemic? At home, for months, and without a physical change of scene, even new experiences all start to seem the same. End quote. I'd say this tracks. I mean, sure, we may be having big, significant conversations right now about illness, death, major life, and cultural changes, but if you're having all of those conversations via video call from the exact same place in your house, it may become more difficult to recall them. They might all blend together. Which, I suppose, is perhaps, if you care about remembering, a good reason to take up journaling during this time, or take photos, you know, document it in some way. You may be surprised by what you did or thought or said if you look back even just a couple months from now. We usually think of elephants as 10-foot-tall mammals that weigh several tons, but there is a type of elephant called the elephant shrew that weighs only a couple of pounds and could fit in the palm of your hand. While originally named after elephants just because of a long snout kind of resembling an elephant's trunk, it was later discovered that the elephant shrew actually is more closely related to elephants than to its other namesake, the mole-like shrew. And one type of elephant shrew, the Somali Sengai, which is about the size of a mouse, can race up to speeds of 20 miles an hour and uses its trunk-like nose to suck up ants, has not been seen by scientists since 1968. But was just recently rediscovered. Quoting The Guardian, in 2019, scientists set out to search for the animal following tips from the region, but not in Somalia, from where the only past reports had come, but in neighboring Djibouti. The team tapped into local knowledge and the fact that the Sengais need shelter from birds of prey to set traps in likely locations, baiting them with a concoction of peanut butter, oatmeal, and yeast. They caught a Somali Sengai in the very first trap set in the dry, rocky landscape, identifying it by the tuft of fur on its tail that distinguishes it from the other Sengai species, end quote. They were able to find 12 Sengais in total and were pleased to discover that the Sengais are residing in a habitat unsuitable for human development or agriculture, meaning the Sengais don't appear to be in any sort of threat of extinction, something fairly common for species that researchers lose track of. Quoting again, DNA analysis showed that the Somali Sengais are most closely related to other Sengais that live as far away as Morocco and South Africa. This meant they have now been placed in a new genus, Galagisca. It also meant that an animal with a territory smaller than an average-sized backyard has somehow dispersed across great distances over time, leaving biologists with a new Sangai evolutionary mystery to solve, end quote. The Global Wildlife Conservation has a site dedicated to so-called lost species, ones which were previously discovered but have gone unaccounted for years. And it's pretty cool to click through and learn about their top 25 most wanted. Could make a good homeschool activity for any parents listening today. And of course, there has been other good elephant news this month with the baby boom in Kenya. Amboseli National Park in Kenya saw 170 new elephant calves born this year, compared to the most recent count from 2018 of 113. For these past 2 years, which is roughly the length of an elephant gestation and why there isn't a count from 2019, the baby boom is mostly credited to the heavy rains. More rain means more vegetation to graze and less elephant deaths from dehydration. The elephant population has been on the rise for decades, however, as Kenya has been succeeding at their anti-poaching initiatives. The National Wildlife Service says Kenya has gone from 16,000 elephants in 1989 to 34,800 by the end of 2019. Now that said, while it's very good news for elephants in Kenya, overall, the African elephant population decreased by a full third from 2007 to 2014. So this latest baby boom is definitely a step in the right direction, but it might be more of a Sangai-sized step than a full-sized elephant one. As lockdown measures continue throughout the world, I feel like each season brings a fresh wave of realizations of things we won't be able to do. I personally am still trying to figure out if there's any way for my annual Sleepy Hollow trip to play out safely, but one highlight of that trip is going to a haunted house, and somehow I just can't see an activity in a tight indoor space with lots of screaming being something that any town or company is going to want to put on this year. A few places, however, have anticipated this and have started working on drive-through haunted houses, which hopefully are not as uncomfortable seeming as the drive-through strip clubs in Portland that my friends told me about yesterday. The alleged first drive-through haunted house on the market came from Koagara Sitai, a Japanese horror events company. Quoting CNN, "The Haunted House Drive-In, located in a covered parking garage in a nondescript building in downtown Tokyo, gives visitors a 360-degree front-row experience that simulates being stuck in a car during a zombie outbreak. Visitors turn off the engine and the garage shutter closes, plunging the vehicle into total darkness. Drivers receive a set of Bluetooth speakers and the spooky tale begins. For the next 17 minutes, blood-soaked ghouls and zombies press up against the windows and rock the car," end quote. And the cars do get super bloody. But don't worry, the ghouls clean it up afterwards. In fact, most of the photos online show the costumed actors cleaning the cars. And you also don't have to have a car to do it. There is a car rental package for just a bit more. And for those cars, they are lined with plastic and cleaned in between each use. This company is very serious about cleanliness and other hygiene guidelines to protect both customers and actors. Koagara Sitai is ahead of the game on the drive-through haunted house trend globally, because while here in America we indulge in haunted houses primarily around Halloween, in Japan it's a popular summertime activity, a way to kind of cool down on hot summer nights. But if you are not, as I imagine almost all of you listening are not, anywhere near Tokyo, there is a cool drive-through haunted house coming up soon in Los Angeles. Netflix just announced they're doing a Stranger Things-themed drive-through haunted house starting next week on August 26th. And unlike the one in Tokyo, where you just stay in the car unmoving in a garage, Netflix is calling this one a drive-into experience, because you'll actually be driving through multiple levels of the Starcourt Mall, the secret Russian lab, and the Upside Down. Live scenes featuring characters from the show, although not the original actors, I don't believe, will play out at each stop along the tour. No word yet on if this will expand to other cities in the US or around the world, but I wouldn't hold my breath. Netflix tends to just pick one city for these pop-up kind of events and stick to that. The good news, though, is that the Duffer Brothers said this week that Stranger Things, which halted filming during the pandemic, will not end with the upcoming season, Season 4. That's not actually an official confirmation, but it is a pretty good reassurance. And as for other non-Stranger Things-themed drive-thru haunted houses, I have seen some announced in California, Florida, Texas, and New Mexico so far. I'm sure there are plenty more already out there and even more to come. I would keep an eye out for your favorite local haunted house because most that are able to this year probably will be shifting to drive-thrus. And hopefully, if it turns out well enough, maybe this will be something that sticks around. I kind of like the idea that I wouldn't have to worry about anyone popping up or grabbing me. You know, like, you can be scared and creeped out, but still safe behind some glass. I'm into that. Before I go today, I just want to send a big thank you to all of our new listeners who came from Kotke.org. I've been super stoked about this new partnership, and I hope you have all been enjoying the show so far. And of course, thank you to everyone who has been listening for the many months before this as well. It's been great having an outlet to share all of the interesting things that I come across every day with like-minded, curious people. So thank you for sticking around. And with that, I am off to go send my DNA to my local sushi restaurant and see if they'll make me some personalized sashimi. I hope that you have a good weekend, whatever you're doing, and I will talk to you on Monday.